This chapter is a little different than prior service manuals. And I'll try to explain it in a way that's easy to understand. At 475 Riverside Drive, which has been where our offices have been since the early 90s, the General Services Office and the AA Grapevine Office used to be on different floors. GSO was on 11, the Grapevine was on 10. Over the past, like, let's just say, 11 or 12 years, the Grapevine at first gave up its 11th floor space and took, its 10th floor space and took smaller space on the 14th floor. Then, once AAWS was able to get rid of the space on the 10th floor for good, there was a construction project done on the 11th floor so that AA Grapevine's offices could also be on the 11th floor. So now they share one set of elevators, one common lobby, one receptionist, and we still have the whole 11th floor. So why is that interesting? Well, because if you read older copies of the service manual, GSO was only used in relation to AAWS and the services that are provided other than the Grapevine. The Grapevine had its own office in the same building. But now, if you read this, it says the General Service Office of AA is located at 475 Riverside Drive, New York City. It is comprised of all the employees of AA's two principal service corporations, AA World Services, Inc., and AA Grapevine, Inc. So that's different. I'm not saying bad. I'm just saying it's different. We have so many different legal entities that back in the days of typewriters and word processors, we had different piles of stationery. We had General Service Board stationery for use by the trustees. We had AA World Services stationery for use by the AAWS board. We had AA Grapevine board stationery for use by the AA Grapevine. And then we had General Service Office stationery, which was used by the GSO staff. And we had AA Grapevine stationery. And I could go through it. I could see these letters in my head. If you got a letter from AAWS, it was the green print. If you got a letter from the General Service Office, it was the blueprint. But now that everybody is all on one floor, what this chapter is saying, which in the spirit of unity might be the right thing to say, is that we have one General Service Office and both corporations work there. It goes on to say the chief executives of both AA World Services and AA Grapevine are AA members and provide leadership and overall management in the daily operation of the General Service Office. Housed together, again, they say that, the two corporations are independent, but have coordinated human resources, finance, and shipping functions, along with the archival records covering both corporations. So the archives are the archives of everything. Now, what's interesting there, and I'm sure there are some people here that know Concept 11 better than I do, is that sentence, some could argue, goes against what it says in Concept 11. I'll read it again. But have coordinated human resources, finance, and shipping functions, along with archival records covering both corporations. Concept 11 talks about very limited places the two corporations should share resources, but stresses they should be very separate. Where here, this language talks about what's gone on really since like 2009, which is really what every company and everybody had to do during the recession, which is, do we need two finance departments? Do we need two accounts payable departments? Do we need two human resources departments? And I'm sure some of you work for a company that has multiple companies owned by the same parent company. And it's very common in the world today to have shared resources. You know, I work in the construction industry, large construction on the insurance side. But it's very common today for large construction companies to have different companies, but yet IT is shared and human resources is shared and finance is shared. So that's what they're saying here. It goes on to say that GSO serves all AA groups in the United States and Canada and also offers services to AA overseas, especially in countries where there's no structure. While many other countries have their own GSOs, the U.S. Canada General Service Office, the earliest to be established, is generally regarded as the senior office. It performs many functions that groups, districts, and areas and intergroup central offices cannot easily handle. For those of you, again, that know the concepts better than me, this is a reference to what you'll read in the concepts, which is the General Service Office should do for the groups what they can't, but not what the groups can do for themselves. That the General Service Office should stay away from and not interfere with things that the groups can handle on their own. It talks about visitors to New York are invited to take a guided tour of GSO, attend an open meeting that takes place every Friday at 11. I believe the first time that meeting is opening is during the conference next Friday, the Friday before the conference. Hopefully very soon, that 11 o'clock Friday meeting. In my younger days in New York, I went to that meeting all the time. Hopefully that meeting will be open. And it goes on to say that you can take a tour. And so I want to stress to anybody here two things. Number one, tours aren't only on Fridays. If you email and give the office a lot of notice, they might be able to schedule a tour on a different day. But if you do go there on a Friday, which I would suggest, go there early. Whether at 9 o'clock, 9:30. Take a tour of the office and the archives. Most people are blown away by how professional the office is. And how that it really is a hotbed of activity. And you will get to walk past the finance department and the records department and go into the archives and the publishing department and the IT department. And then stop at each office, the corrections desk, the public information desk, the general manager's office, the staff coordinator's office. I can't say enough how much I would stress that if you're anywhere within New York City, try to go visit it. It will be most people I know that have only been there once, it's changed. It's really had an impact on them. The other thing I want to say is don't be afraid to thank the people who work there. And not just the AA staff people that we know every day. A lot of us that are embedded in service, we all know who's on the corrections desk and who's on the public information desk and who's on the group services desk. And that's awesome. But there's like 60 other employees there that are not alcoholic who just go there and work hard because that's their job. And they're doing the best for the fellowship every day they go to work. And they really do appreciate when someone stops. And it really does leave a lasting impression on those employees when people let them know how important the work they do every day is. Like how important it is to keeping the lights on of AA. to keeping the groups connected, to keeping the groups communicated with, to getting the literature out, to answering letters from inmates, all these things. I can tell you what you won't find. You won't find any of the 80 employees standing around looking for something to do. That's what you will not find. Our employees work really hard every day. It says here the General Service Office is comprised of 800 employees, 88 AWS, 12 Grapevine. That 88 number fluctuates. A couple of them are part-time. And it says, while a number of GSO employees are AA members as required by the specific nature of their job, many of the professional services handled in the office are provided by non-alcoholic employees who are quite familiar with AA principles and practices. It goes on to talk about financial support for GSO. It says group and individual member contributions to the General Service Board's general fund. It's what I talk about all the time. While you might say you're giving a contribution to GSO, you're really giving it to the General Service Board's general fund. Income from AWS Publishing and any excess income after operations from the AA Grapevine. That's what funds the AA operation. I love this section. Who may contribute to AA? Members, groups, and other AA entities such as delegates, areas, districts, conventions, roundups, and intergroup central offices. Those are the only people who can contribute. That's it. Clubhouses cannot contribute to the General Service Board because they're considered outside entities. Self-support. Group participation in AA is part of our spiritual heritage, and it's more important than the dollar amount of the contributions. Making regular contributions to GSO throughout the service structures ties a group to AA worldwide. Many AA groups have implemented the following: regular contributions, birthday plans, Grapevine Lavinia subscriptions. I'm a little interested in why they combined contributions and GSO with Grapevine in this chapter, because we keep the Grapevine finances so separate. It talks about the contribution limit here, $5,000 a year for individuals who are alive, $10,000 for an estate one time. It says contributions are sometimes made to honor the memory of a deceased member. Of course, contributions of this type, like any other, can be accepted only from AA members and groups. And in the case of individual members, are subject to $5,000. That is because some other 12-step fellowships over the last 10 years have started to take memorial contributions from non-members if they were in memory of a member. And I'm sure that's why they stressed that here. If I know someone who passed away and send in money and say, I want to make a contribution in memory of so-and-so, it has to come from an AA member. There's no amount of contributions that can be made to GSO by an AA group. In recent years, less than 50% of the groups listed with GSO have made contributions. So I get a question like this a lot. I want to contribute more than $5,000. Okay. Take $500 extra and drop it in your group's basket. If you're determined to contribute more than $5,000, the way to do it is through your group. Now, then we go to the other side of Tradition 7. Should any one member of a group give too much money compared to others? Not really. The $5,000 limit is to make sure that we remain unique. You know, the seventh tradition is one of those one spots in Alcoholics Anonymous where we actually want to be unique. Unlike newcomers who all think they're unique, and we tell them they're not unique, when it comes to the seventh tradition, we want to be unique. Because you know what you won't see? And, you know, I sit on the board of a very large charity in Los Angeles, not AA. And when I go to that building and I walk in, you know what I see? I see a room that's named after somebody who donated a lot of money. This is the so-and-so library. This is the so-and-so gymnasium. Or I see a plaque that has different levels of people who've donated money. Like, these are our platinum donors, and these are our gold donors, and these are our silver donors. That's what makes us unique. We don't ever want anyone to think that they have more say or are entitled to anything more, different treatment, because of the amount of money that they contribute. It makes us very unique in the nonprofit world. It talks about expenses. For operating and reporting purposes, AWX expenses are divided into two categories, service and publishing. For many years, AA groups and members have contributed enough to cover some, but not all, of the service expenses. Net income from publishing activities establishes the remaining funds needed to enable GSO to provide its vital services. So that means literature profit. Sometimes people say, we get as much money in literature as we do in contributions. That's not true. You can't compare literature sales to a contribution. If someone makes a $1 contribution, we get a dollar towards our services. If someone buys a $1 pamphlet, we only get the money above what it costs to make that pamphlet. The editing, the publishing, the printing, the paper. So it's literature profit. And in the last, well, COVID, I know, outlier for sure. But leading up to COVID, up to 2019, we were really going in the right direction. Almost 80% of our expenses were paid for by contributions. And like 20% literature profit. Some years, 25% literature profit. I am going to ask if anyone has questions about that chapter, chapter 10. Do they receive contributions from other countries? Sometimes. We do have a thing called the International Literature Fund. We use that to offset translation costs. Some countries will sometimes make a contribution to the International Literature Fund. There are members and groups that sometimes send contributions to our General Service Board, and we do accept it. What is important to note on the contributions is we don't accept designated or earmarked contributions. So if you sent a check in for $100 and said, I got sober in a prison, I want this money to go for corrections, you would be contacted and they would ask you, are you okay with it going in the general fund? Because we don't take earmarked contributions. Because earmarked contributions set up a whole different set of regulation from the outside world. Because if you are a nonprofit and you promise to use the money and take it to use it for something and don't use every penny of it for that, you're not operating honestly and ethically. And there are nonprofits in the United States who have gotten in trouble who've had to return money. So we don't take earmarked contributions. We keep it very simple. Any other questions about the General Service Office? Any comment on Levine, French magazine from Quebec, contributing to the General Service Board? No, I mean, Levine is an AA service entity. It's actually handled by the four French Canadian areas. It's actually still published by volunteers, not paid employees. But I'm not sure where that person is going. But if Levine is sending a contribution in, it seems to me that they are a AA service entity. I don't see how the discussion goes against concept 11. I'm not familiar with the concepts. Could you clarify why the GSO section? What I'm saying is there is very strong language in concept 11 about how separate the corporation should be. And this service manual talks about over the last 12 years where we've found economies of scale to work together. Still separate companies, but resources that we could share. That's all I was saying. You know, I don't think some people realize, and I'll share this with you. As much as we kind of hem and haw about our contributions, and we all know in the big book, we know about Black Friday, right? Because Bill was there. We know about Wall Street crashed. We know people jumped from towers of high finance. But I will tell you this. If you lay a chart of the performance of the stock market since 1935 up until today, over our contributions, you will see that they basically follow the same trend. When the world is doing well, we do well. When our members are suffering financially, we suffer financially. 2008, 2009, 2010, 2011. In the regular world, lots of people were losing their houses. In the regular world, lots of people are losing their jobs. In the regular world, a lot of people's retirement and 401ks were worth 30 or 40% of what they were the year before. And so that greatly affected the economy at GSO. Contributions in 2009 and 2010, it was hard trying to make decisions to preserve everything, honor concept 11, but find places where we could save money if we worked together a little bit. Let's see. What kind of training would occur for staff members if they're quite familiar with the AA principles? We don't do training on the steps. We don't try to. We have no mandatory step workshops or big book workshops for our employees. It's just that they get so used to working with our members and get so familiar with really, especially the concept of service, that doing things for other people, for most alcoholics, is important so that we're not focusing on ourselves. But there's no official kind of big book training for our non-alcoholic employees. Do we sell literature to outside entities like Hazleton? And is that accepting money from non-AA members? That's a great question. So here's what I would tell you. First of all, yes. We sell AA literature to anyone who wants to buy it. We do not discriminate. The other thing I would tell people is, you know how sometimes people complain that, oh, those damn people from the treatment center bringing all that treatment language into my meeting. I think a lot of people are happy that some treatment centers still want to offer alcoholics our message, the message of the big book. I think where we have to be careful is, do they ever buy so much that it would affect that they get some kind of, you know, like I talked about the plaque on the wall that we don't give people who give a lot of money because we don't take a lot of money. Would some outside entity ever have more privilege inside AA than an AA group? And my experience is they don't, but they do. They do buy a lot of literature. So does Barnes and Noble. So do other book retailers. So does Walmart. So does Costco. So does Bob's, Best Buy. They all do. We sell literature to a lot of outside entities. So what about AA meetings in a clubhouse that take Seventh Tradition contributions but don't actually contribute any of that money to AA entities? Is that legit? Well, I would be careful with that question. If you go to a meeting at a clubhouse and all the money for the meeting goes to the clubhouse, then none of that money will ever go to the General Service Board. It's the club's money now. But there are many groups that meet at clubhouses where they pay rent to the clubhouse. And then they keep some of the money in their own account. The group or meeting from the club can send a contribution. It's the club that can't send the contribution. And as far as clubhouses that take all the money, you know, all I would tell people is then find someplace else to meet if you don't like that. The clubhouse is just providing a place for an AA group to meet. But once that money is clubhouse money, it does not come to the General Service Board. Are clubhouses considered outside entities because they're owned by non-alcoholics? Not really. Because if you go back in the history of some of those clubhouses, a lot of the early owners were alcoholics. But it was like they owned a store or a restaurant or a lumberyard. They didn't own an AA entity. They owned a clubhouse. Now, many clubhouses over the years have converted to become 501c3s that have a board, but that corporation is not AA. Somebody is telling me staff now attends a 1728 meeting. That's not really true. So I just want to just... that's not really true. The 1728 meeting is only held during board weekends. Most of the only staff who are there on board weekends are the AA staff members, not the non-alcoholics who work Monday to Friday. There's a 1728 meeting held at the conference. Again, very few of the non-alcoholic staff members are at the conference. So the people who are attending the 1728 meeting, most of them are AA members. Let's see. Could an AA member visit GSO with my wife? Yes, you can. Thoughts on why so few groups contribute to GSB? I don't know. We have a lot of meetings that have group numbers. A lot of meetings have group numbers that really aren't groups. That's just a fact that's been going on forever. But I tend to focus on the groups that are contributing, not the groups that aren't. I want groups to contribute. but I hate to focus on. It's like focusing on the people who don't do service. It kind of takes away from respecting and honoring the people who do service. Let's see. Would it be historically accurate that AA's limit on personal contributions began from Bill W.'s experience with the Rockefeller Foundation? I think a lot of that. I think that was one of the early big factors that a billionaire had to tell us that we were so irresponsible and let everybody else pay our bills that it was time for us to pay our own way. I think that definitely had an effect. Bernard Smith was the big push to change the name of the Alcoholic Foundation to the General Service Board of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I think that's important to know too. We don't use our reserve fund to pay for this year's service. Other universities and everybody else, they have an endowment. They would take our reserve fund and they would invest it in the stock market and make a lot of money on our reserve fund and use that to pay for our current year services. We don't do that. Bernard Smith was adamant that a foundation or an endowment would not be good for Alcoholics Anonymous, that we needed to pay our own way today, not use money that someone gave us 5 years ago. And that's why we restrict the reserve fund to low interest treasury bills or certificates of deposit. We do not invest the reserve fund in the stock market or in equities of any kind. Let's see. My district up. Someone's telling me now that I'm reading these in the order they come in, that the new general manager started a new 1728 meeting for the staff. If that's true, that's great. Let's see. How do you feel about the treatment committee providing big books and other literature treatment programs? Well, if the treatment programs for alcoholics, I'm all for our literature getting to anybody. I think individual committees should make decisions. I like libraries and correctional facilities. What do I mean by that? I like when we give a correctional facility like two cases of big books, and we let them stamp it property of the correctional facility. Why do I like that? Because if anyone has ever seen a shakedown inside a correctional facility, property that belongs to the correctional facility gets left alone. Personal property of inmates, books, calendars, posters, God knows what else, is trashed a lot of times. So I love libraries that inmates can get to. For treatment facilities and other recovery places, I think that the committee knows best. Your committee knows best. I'm not sure, in my view, if it's a treatment facility that charges $100,000 for someone to go there, I don't think we need to be giving free big books to a treatment facility that's charging 30 or 40 grand a month. But if it's like a nonprofit homeless mission or a rescue mission that is just dealing with people who have nothing and some of them are alcoholic, I don't know. I personally feel fine if that's where my seventh tradition money is going. Let's see. Are clubhouses required to state that their basket money is not going to the general service office directly and is only going to the clubhouse? Well, AA doesn't regulate what clubhouses do, number one, because they're not AA. I guess clubhouses handle it in all kinds of different ways. I believe that we should always be transparent with the seventh tradition basket, and we should tell people what that money is being used for. My district has a monthly birthday dinner. They raffle off items people bring. I think they call it a 50-50 raffle or something. The proceeds for the raffle are included in the monthly district for the treasurer's report. Seems like it's not within the seventh tradition, but I'm not sure, is it? Well, there's a million people who would debate me on this for a long time. And 32 years later, I'm still trying to quit the debating society that the literature suggests, right? Here's what I would tell you. If the raffle is for AA literature, I don't find anything wrong with it. However, if you are having a game of chance, a cash raffle, I would just tell you that in many states and counties and towns, you need a license to do that. You don't just get to have gambling because you're AA. The other thing I would suggest is, are you having the raffle for fellowship and participation, or do you need that money to pay your bills? Because if you need that money to pay your bills, you're really not self-supporting. I would much rather put an extra $2 in a basket than participate in a raffle. That's myself. Other people feel differently. I have a question. Does the New York office send out solicitations for donations to groups like the central office does locally? My group would send contributions to New York, but we never got asked for contributions. No, we sometimes have a gratitude thing in November, gratitude month in box 459. We send out thank you letters. We have a quarterly contribution report from the treasurer of the General Service Board. I think during the pandemic in June of 2020, the treasurer of the General Service Board prepared a little video presentation because we had taken $3 to $4 million out of the reserve fund and encouraged groups to give. But for the most part, we're not overly, we don't solicit contributions. If Barnes & Noble, Hazleton, etc. purchase literature from us, that means we accept money from outside entities. It may not be a contribution, but we're still accepting outside money. How is that following the spirit of the seventh tradition? Is accepting money from Barnes & Noble considered a seventh tradition loophole? Nope, it's not. First of all, if we charge Barnes & Noble $8 for a big book, probably about $7 of that is going towards the cost of making the big book. So what we're getting is like a dollar. If you told me that outside entities were all of a sudden making up 50% of our operating income from that profit, I would be worried. But the total literature profit we used to pay our expenses in 2019 was between 20 and 25%. So it's a very, very minimal number. But I would hate to see us stop selling literature to everybody who's in touch with alcoholics, whether they're a court, a correctional facility, a treatment center. What about money groups send to district area in a group and central offices that they don't spend and send to GSO? Does that affect the power of the purse and the upside down triangle of the groups? You know, that's a great question. So let me be very careful how I answer this. If during COVID, let's face it, areas and districts, because they don't have employees or rent buildings, they seem to do much better during COVID. Intergroups and the General Service Office that had to continue to pay employees, continue to pay rent on buildings. If groups or others made extra contributions to an intergroup or the General Service Office during COVID, I totally get it. But I think what the other person is saying, well, what the person asking this question is asking is, let's take my group, for example. And I'll give an example. I just want to get a pen. Because I want to make sure that I'm accurate. So let's say that your group comes to the end of the quarter. And let's just say your group has $150 left over. You paid all your bills. You paid your expenses. You have your prudent reserve, and you have $150 extra. I don't really care what percentage split you use. I'm just going to use my example, okay? Let's say you're a group that sends 60% to your local intergroup. That's $90. And let's say you're a group that sends 20% to GSO. That's $30, right? So now you've given away 80% of the 150. And let's say you give 10% to your area, that's $15. And you give 10% to your district, that's $15. If you give $90 to your local intergroup, you expect them to use it for services for alcoholics and those who need help in your intergroup area. If you gave $30 to the General Service Board, you expect them to use that to carry out the services of the General Service Office. If you gave $15 to your district or to your area, you expect them to use that $15 to carry out services to those in your area or district. In some places, districts and areas have started sending money to the General Service Board. And what I would question is that messing around with the group's autonomy? The group has a right to spend that money as they wish or contribute it as they wish. If it's my group and I already gave $90 to GSO or $90 to intergroup and $30 to GSO, if I gave my area $15, why would they be sending some of that to GSO? And I'm not talking about during COVID. I'm talking about in regular times. We already gave money to GSO. I expect my area to spend that on my area. So if that was the question, I hope I answered it the best I could. But again, let's just go with AA Finances 101. When you get rid of the money and give it to someone else, it's no longer your money. I mean, I just want everyone to know that. The way to correct that is if your area district is giving money away and not using it to serve your area or district, send less money to your area or district and send it to your intergroup instead, or find a way to use it locally. Should every group, central office, intergroup, district, and area treasurer know the difference between donations and contributions. Seems many don't. You know, that's true. I mean, how many times am I in a meeting when I hear, make a donation to our seventh tradition? We don't use the word donation. We don't accept donations. Contributions are different than donations. I don't contribute to the Internal Revenue Service. I don't donate to the Internal Revenue Service. I contribute. I don't donate to Wells Fargo Bank for my mortgage. I contribute. I donate to the local food pantry. I don't, you know who else I donate to? I donate to Dr. Bob's House and Stepping Stones. Those are outside AA entities, and I donate money to them. I contribute money to my group and to the General Service Board. And we should, because the word donate starts to have a slippery slope effect. Like, I've been to an AA convention where I walk around a room for a silent auction, and there's a TV that the local appliance store donated. And there's a gym membership that the local gym donated. That's way outside the seventh tradition. We do not take things for free to have raffles or silent auctions. Do you think when they do that, they're saying they have too much money and don't need it? Not sure what that means. If they say that they're giving away money to the General Service Board because they don't need it, my answer would be this. I am not an expert on alcoholism. I'm an alcoholic. I have been through the so-called system in my younger days. I do currently sit on the board of a large homeless shelter. I'm aware that the jails are busting at the seams with alcoholics. It would be hard for me to believe that you can't find a way to spend money to serve alcoholics in your own district or area. I mean, thousands of people are dying of this disease every day. Thousands of people are getting arrested for crimes that does not make them an alcoholic, but a lot of alcoholics seem to land in the criminal justice system. There are lots of homeless people, and you don't need to be alcoholic to be homeless, but I can tell you that when I leave the homeless shelter that I'm on the board of and I'm waiting for a car to pick me up, a lot of times I will get into a discussion with people who are camped out on the street, or sometimes I'll bring a couple extra cigars and I'll smoke a couple of cigars with some of the people who are having hard times. And it's just not hard to find people who need help who are dying of alcoholism. So I find when people say, well, we don't have anything to spend it on, I'm like, wow. Like, there's plenty of work to do. There is plenty of work to do regarding alcoholism. My home group meets at a local church. We give them a percentage of our seventh tradition, but they will not let us call it rent. We have to put the word donate on our records. So if you look at our records, it looks like we are making a monthly donation contribution to the Church of Christ in Caldwell. It's because of their taxes. Is there anything wrong with what we're doing? No. I've said this before. There are many times when the language of the outside world does not meet our language. We don't take donations. We don't like to give donations. It's not something AA's in the spirit, you know, it's not something we do a lot of. But if you're a landlord, that's the way they take it from everybody and not just you, it seems fine. Are members meeting participants donating money to the basket during a meeting the only way for an AA group to be self-supporting than the principals? Well, for a group, it should be supported by its own group members, part of the long form of the seventh tradition. I'm not saying other people visiting the meeting shouldn't put a dollar or two in, but the group should be able to pay his expenses just on group members. That's what the long form of the seventh tradition says. If you're telling me, should your group have a car wash or a bake sale? No. Not unless you're only washing alcoholic AA members' cars and selling your baked goods to AA members in the meeting. And even that I don't like. But we don't go to the outside world and do bake sales and all this other stuff. And the erosion of the seventh tradition and the sixth tradition in the last 20 years has been great. It really has. And one of the things that I think influences this, and again, let me make a big disclaimer so that I don't insult anyone or nothing gets out that Billy Ann was on some kind of rant. I want to be very clear. I totally support the outside recovery world. I totally support the recovery community. They don't have 12 traditions like we do. They do lots of things we don't do. They have recovery marches. They have recovery fishing tournaments. They have recovery car washes. They have all these things for recovery organizations. And I think what happens a lot, and that's why, you know, I can't thank the 72 people that are here tonight enough, is that a lot of times people don't know better. They see in their recovery world somebody doing that someplace else and think it's fine in AA. And that's why it's so important to take newcomers through the seven to the 12 traditions. So I was going to say seven, but I have tradition seven on my mind because all the questions have been about tradition seven. Our district cannot be sent money earmarked for special services, correct? I don't know what your district does. I know what the General Service Board does. And because our standing committees are held at intergroups rather than the district, these funds can't be earmarked for PI, for example, either, correct? Our local PI corrections and CPC committees all have limited budgets distributed by voted intergroup. This process frustrates me. Intergroup supports AA, not runs AA. Reluctantly sending this question statement. Well, thank you for sending the question. You know, I'll tell you this. In a lot of other countries, intergroups are part of the general service structure. In our country, or countries, U.S. and Canada, intergroups existed before general service. Intergroups are AA. I'm not saying they're not AA. But, you know, I spoke last year on a panel with two other past trustees, and we all said, you know, one of the problems in AA today is that the blurry lines between what a district does and what an intergroup does. And we are dividing our economies because we're sending money to both. And what I would suggest to the person who asked this question is, whenever I talk to somebody about this, no one's really looked at it in 20 or 30 years. They're still doing what you did 20 or 30 years ago. And what you really have to do is match the money with the service. And where is the money to carry out the service? And who should be carrying it out? And let's not do it twice. We don't need to do the same service in the same location twice. But, you know, all the trustees on this panel this day said, God, if there was a way we could find a way to work better or make intergroups part of general service, you know, we inherited what we were given, you know. But there are struggles, you know. And in some places, in-a-group does a lot of the work. I mean, in some places, what I see is in-a-group does a lot of the direct contact with new alcoholics. And the district or area serves with educating the professionals. But then we could go out to the West Coast, where then we throw H&I into the mix. So let's not get that, you know, if it wasn't complicated enough, in certain states on the West Coast, we have hospitals and institutions committees, which are totally autonomous from central office and intergroups and districts and areas. But again, my question is the money going to where the work is being done? And when's the last time we looked at the amount of work being done by each entity? And are we educating the groups on which entity really needs how much of the money to carry out the services? And are there things being done by two or three different committees that is basically like flushing money down the toilet because it only needs to be done once? So these are challenging challenges inside Alcoholics Anonymous. Let's see. If GSO had considered moving forward with applying for the PEI loan in 2020 and received it, how do you believe they would have tagged that into their finances? In other words, it wouldn't be a contribution, obviously. So what would they have labeled it? That's a great question. So, first of all, they didn't have to make that decision because they decided not to apply for a PPE loan. Some intergroups and central offices, and believe it or not, an AA convention committee or two did apply for those loans. I am on the record a long time on this. I do not begrudge any of them from taking that loan. But I don't think loan forgiveness correlates with the seventh tradition. While people and businesses might not have to pay that loan back, I do not see how an AA service entity could accept forgiveness. The other thing I think a lot of AA entities learned during this time, especially intergroups and central offices, is we can't be overly dependent on literature sales and sales of other AA-related items. Now, people complain about GSO getting money from Hazleton, whatever. I mean, it's such a little bit amount of money. We need to start looking at our central offices and intergroups. Many of them are funded greater than 50% by the profit from literature sales. And then if AA literature sales aren't enough, they sell outside literature. And then when outside literature doesn't make it, they start selling bumper stickers and circle and triangle earrings and God knows what else. I am kind of a purist on AA economics, that your business plan has to be sustainable. And any plan that is not significantly focused on contributions is not sustainable. This has become like the seventh tradition. I will end in a couple of seconds. Are there examples of rotation of intergroup office managers, or as paid employees, are they generally considered permanent roles? I hate this question. At our office, employees can work there for as long as they want. But the general manager is limited to 5 to 7 years so that nobody becomes the face of AA. Most intergroups do not limit the term of their, what some call it, an executive secretary, some call it a manager, some call it a general manager, whatever they call their executive position. I'm not saying there should be rotation at intergroups, but I can tell you two things that I've seen happen. And again, let me say I have the greatest respect for all the people that went to work today managing an intergroup or central office and how hard it is to deal with the fellowship on a customer service basis, on a daily basis. I'm well aware it is easier to deal with active drunks than sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous when you're dealing with an AA service office. I would answer the phone answering for drunks needing help rather than AA members complaining any day of the week, right? But I will be honest about two problems I've seen over my 25 years in AA service. The first is when we don't pay an intergroup manager adequately. As the tradition says, or the concept, well recompensed. Because when we pay somebody less than they deserve, they're going to start to feel that they're entitled to more. And if they're not getting more money, they might want their vote to count for more. They might want their ideas to count for more. They might want more of a say in what goes on. And they feel that because they work for less money, they're entitled to that. So that is not good at all. The second thing is that the intergroup steering committee, or whatever you call it, has to be strong. And the chair of that committee has to be an AA leader. I think I talked about this before. I mean, I know what it's like to be. I grew up in AA service looking at the men and women who were the general managers of GSO, like they were my icons, like I so looked up to them. And so even for me, at 40-something years old, to be the chair of AA World Services and to walk into the general manager's office and to have to remember that I have a duty to serve Alcoholics Anonymous. Like that day, the general manager works for me. And it's my job to carry out at the bottom of the triangle what the groups invest in trusted servants. And so I think sometimes when I see these difficulties with long-term central office managers, it's usually not them. It's usually that the trusted servant steering committee just abdicated more and more responsibility to the paid employee. And that shouldn't happen. You know, trusted servants should set policy, and paid employees should carry out the policy. But it's a difficult relationship for sure. Can any group central offices take grants outside contributions? I guess they could. It's up to them. Should they? No. Those are not self-supporting. Those are not contributions from AA members and groups. Somebody wrote, we call ours. I'm not going to say what they call them because would give it away. And somebody wrote, they're worth every penny. I'm sure they are. There are great people who are managing our central offices and intergroups all across the country. And I started out by saying, we are not an easy group of people to supply customer service to. I'll just, if you don't believe me, just the next AA convention you go to, just hang out at the front desk and listen to 10 people checking in. And how some of our people talk to people behind the front desk, it breaks my heart sometimes. My heart really goes out to all the paid employees in our central offices and in the groups. Okay, that's it. next week, we will do AA World Services and hopefully AA Grapevine. But we get a lot of questions here, and that's awesome. And I like stopping after every chapter and going to the questions because it makes sure that people don't feel like they get robbed of being able to ask a question. And that's what we're here for. So everybody remember, it was last weekend, Sunday, I believe, 83rd anniversary of the printing of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, April 11th to 13th of 1939. So 83 years that book's been around. And we got a week or two left before the General Service Conference. So all you GSRs and everybody out here, thank you for your service. So that's it. We'll close with the responsibility statement. I am responsible when anyone, anywhere reaches out for help. I want the hand of AA always to be there. And for that, I am responsible. Good night, everyone.